Thank you. Deputy Chair Dean Fabiano is not attending today, and Legislator Herb Litz?
Here.
Thank you. Legislator Kathy Nolan?
Here.
Legislator Eric Stewart?
I am here.
We have 4 members present tonight, Chair.
Thank you. So with that, I will accept a motion for the approval of the August 8th, 2022 minutes. Do I hear? Thank you. Second?
Second.
Legislator Stewart, all in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Tonight we were supposed to have a guest. Something must have come up. I did speak with her Saturday. She has concerns about the railroad crossings along, this is King's Highway in Saugerties. As the area starts to become more populated and there's more buildings, there's more driveways going in, and there's no crossing guards that come down. So basically it's, you know, we're just driving over the tracks. I believe there's a similar issue along Legs Mill Road. I don't know if Director Doyle would like to address that briefly, and then we'll move on since she's not here to specifically discuss. Yes, Director Doyle.
I can address the King's Highway issue. The King's Highway issue, I believe it's probably, her last name is Burdick, as I recall. We've done a study, Transportation Council did a study many years ago with respect to, there's, I believe, 6 private crossings up there. And those are private crossings are permitted by the railroad before the railroad became as active as it is now. And there are a number of issues associated with those private crossings. One is the fact that coming off of King's Highway up to the railroad track, you have a limited amount of visibility. Because of the grades, in order to see those crossings. And the other is that you really don't have enough time to react because the trains are running fairly fast up there. The solution back in the day was essentially we converted one of those private crossings where we've had, I think at one point in time, 3 fatalities associated with it down by the Stone Pony, which is a deli down in that area that goes into that area. We converted that to a gated crossing and extended the throat so the trucks going in and out wouldn't have their trailers essentially across the railroad tracks. And the thought was that eventually working together, we could extend a private road up the other side of the tracks from this gated and controlled crossing to serve the other crossings, and that has not come about. There's no money associated with that funding from the federal side. And the railroad seems, while they want the crossing closed, the railroad has not been willing to essentially put the necessary funds towards that. It remains a concern for the Transportation Council. It continues to essentially show up as an illustrative project, but we don't have the necessary funds to essentially construct that roadway. So that's that. I'm not sure what the reference is on Legs Mills Road, because Legs Mill Road does have gates and crossbucks associated with it.
Okay.
So I'm not sure about that reference.
Mistaken about the location. Legislator Litz and then Legislator Nolan.
Dennis, do you know if there's been a formal notification to the Region 8 Railroad liaison engineer in writing, so maybe some state funding or federal funding could be used to put up those gates?
Yes, several times, Herb, there's been notice. The difficulty with putting up the gates is there's not enough room to clear the tracks in some of these instances, because the tracks are so close to where the gates would have to be up. So the thought would be is that the further north you go on these crossings, one of them, believe it or not, is actually named Doyle's Crossing. but the further north you go, the more difficult it is because of the vertical curve associated with it. But we've had several notifications, and I would note that the current regional representative for rail safety has left the region. He's now working for the FRA, and he's been replaced by a gentleman by the name of Dan Kutz, and we've talked to Dan about this, these issues. So there, and the fact that we have someone now that used to work with the department now working for the FRA is, the FRA is very much aware of the situation up here. And I believe Ms. Burdick actually lost her husband on one of the crossings. So she's very engaged.
I thought Greg Hart was the railroad liaison.
That's correct. Greg was, and then he has joined the ranks of FRA.
Oh, wow. Didn't know that. Thank you.
And you had nothing to do with the name of that crossing, I assume.
Hopefully not. No, I did not.
Legislator Nolan?
Thank you. About how much money would we be talking about to accomplish what needs to be done? Do you have any ballpark figures on that?
I don't, Legislator Nolan. I could go back to the old study. I think there was some numbers in there. It is a substantial number. It's in the millions, as I recall.
All right. Well, it sounds like something that we need to work to address.
Right. So you can't really put a number on the price of lives. And as Director Doyle said, there's been multiple fatalities here, including a truck that couldn't get across the track as he was waiting to enter a work site up there. So perhaps next month we'll have more information and see what Mrs. Budick what she's looking for as far as resolution. You know, she had mentioned, you know, additional crossing guards. They're 100,000 each, but I think from what Director Doyle just said, that some of them don't have the room for that. So, okay, well, thank you very much. So we will move on to our resolutions. The first one is 414, authorizing a right to cross the right-of-way owned by Ulster County of the Ulster and Delaware Railroad corridor near mile point 4.8. Looking for a motion for discussion, Legislator Nolan. Second?
Second.
Legislator Stewart. Okay. Any further question or comment?
No, that's okay.
I think the changes that Legislator Litz requested and that Director Doyle provided are big improvements, and I think should generate a lot of support that otherwise would have been more problematic. So I appreciate both of them, Legislator Litz for the suggestion and Director Doyle for implementing the good suggestion.
I agree as well. I was just concerned that it put a lot of language in there about how supportive the county was of public housing, which we are, but I didn't want it to be misinterpreted that, you know, we were supporting the project, just the right of way. So if there's no other comment, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. The next is... a part of this as well, resolution 455, amending capital project number 334, Kingston Rail Trail, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute agreements, certifications, and reimbursement requests for federal aid on behalf of Ulster County with the New York State Department of Transportation for construction and construction inspection. Motion to move for discussion, Legislator Nolan.
Very happy to move it, but it is quite separate from the resolution.
This is separate. This is the Central Hudson one. And we passed that one already. Okay. Legislator Litz, did you second it?
Yeah, I did. This is actually the rail trail itself, O&W. Yeah.
This is the O&W.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. All right. Any discussion? No, hearing none, I'll call the vote.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think this sounds like a great project. I mean, yes, it is a sizable chunk of money, but it sounds, I think a lot of that expense has to do with like putting in a new pedestrian bridge. And if it's for the O&W, I'm all on board. I also have a slight conflict of interest because it goes through the town of Hurley, which who I know also supports this project. So I'm all for it.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
That's a confluence of interest. I think you're serving your.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Confluence. Much better.
Yes. And I would just say this was a great project in 2014 and it's even better now.
All right. So we will call the vote on this. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, it's been moved. Next, resolution 457, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $403,918 entered into by the county with Barton and LaDuce.
Moved.
No one? Second?
Second.
Any discussion on this? Questions? Okay. Hearing none, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Resolution number 462, approving the execution of a contract for $505,855 entered into by the county with SNO Construction Services for the college. Motion to discuss?
So moved.
Second. Nolan? I did, okay, she's not on here. I did get a call, so I'm a little more comfortable with the project. So we're good if there's no other questions. Yes.
I just had a quick question. This is for the system that will be installed is a mini, well, I don't know if it's mini is the correct word, but it's a split system that will be installed, correct? So this is totally in keeping with the county's goals of, you know, getting off fossil fuels by 2040.
Yeah. Yeah. And the discussion I had that the college is really trying. Some of these buildings are just so old. You know, they've replaced the windows, so they've noticed a marked decrease in their energy use. They're putting in the split units so that they can turn off certain sections. They don't have to heat or cool the whole building. They can just do certain sections. So they're doing what they can. And, you know, I'm still pushing for, you know, heat pumps and solar on everything. But I guess we have to be reasonable, too.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So if there's no other discussion, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Thank you. Resolution number 466. Declaring Ulster County's intent to act as lead agency under New York State Environmental Quality Review Act for the construction of a public safety radio tower. And if I could say that word, I'd be happy to be located on Tonch Mountain, town of Boston.
It's Tonchy Mountain.
Tonchy Mountain. Okay, I can't say that one either.
Happy to move it.
Okay, Legislator Nolan and second Legislator Litz. Who is here to discuss this? Hey, Legislator Doyle. No, Director Doyle.
Yeah, but,
please, no.
It's a promotion I may not want.
And I don't think that's a promotion either. So, yeah.
So the county is currently moving towards essentially a simulcast radio system. And that means that we're going to need additional towers and additional equipment on certain towers. Simulcast basically means that the signal goes out from one tower, it goes to all towers, and all towers broadcast at the same time and all towers receive at the same time. And that is one of the ways to essentially increase the coverage available at the county level by essentially that simulcast system. And the Tonchy Tower is currently about 80 feet is a guide tower. It is, it will not handle the additional equipment associated with need for a simulcast system. And those basically are microwave equipment. In addition, it's not tall enough to talk to the other towers. And the one tower it needs to talk to is a tower in Saugerties. It also needs to talk a little bit back as we move up the 28 corridor. It's going to need to talk to towers on up the 28 corridor as well. So we've done, we've issued an RFP. We've hired a consultant. They've looked at the structural needs of the tower, and the belief currently is that we'll be able to add about 20, about 40 feet to the existing tower, to go to about 110 to 120 feet. And we'll put new guys on it, et cetera, but we're making sure that that's the case with an additional structural analysis. We want to make sure that we have reached out to the town of Olive, in which this is located. It's right on the corner between Olive and Woodstock, to make sure they're aware of the project and go through the necessary something called a balancing of public interest tests, in order for us to essentially make those necessary improvements to the tower.
Now, there's been a little pushback from the community in Saugerties. Are you thinking that perhaps the town of Olive will not have as much, since, you know, there is a more of an issue, I think, up there with your emergency radio system, especially when it comes to calls up in, the YMCA camp up there?
The tower is well sited. It sits over the Shokan Reservoir, the existing tower. And the idea that we're not building a self-supporting tower, we may be able to expand the existing tower, I think should allay some of the concerns. But I never want to characterize what a community will or will not do relative to a proposal, particularly when it comes to tower facilities, whether they be for cellular towers or for public radio system towers.
Legislator Stewart and then Legislator Nolan.
Thank you, Chair Petit. Director Doyle, when you made the same presentation to the Environment and Sustainability Committee the other day, you did say that this tower could also be used for other purposes as well, or did you, didn't you, that we could use it as cell tower and other things can be piggybacked onto this public safety radio transmission?
So one of the things that we're looking at is a tower loading chart, and the tower loading chart we're currently considering would allow for a single cell carrier to be added at some point in time, and or broadband capability to be added as well. So that's the current thought with respect to the tower loading chart.
Great. Thank you.
Legislator Nolan.
Thank you, Chair Petit. Yes, I've spoken with Jim Sofranco, the supervisor in Olive, in anticipation of this project, but I think the community is interested and will want the details. They do have a tower there currently and like that coverage. So if this preserves that coverage and potentially extends it, there's likely to be some support from the community for it. There have in the past been considerations about the access roads up there. I think this would utilize the same access road and not require new access roads. So the initial feedback I've been getting has been supportive of this idea. I don't know if there is a plan for public outreach for the whole system or for these individual parts. Or if there are some materials that I can send on to the town. But if there are, I would be happy to spread that information and share whatever you have. I know it's different for each of the towers, so that may not be in place already. It may not be necessary, but it might be helpful.
So if I can, Legislator, excuse me, Nolan. If I can, a couple things. One is that the lead agency designation will carry with it a notification requirement and a draft short environmental form. And we have reached out to both the planning board and the supervisor to let them know that this was coming and trying to request some agenda item to get on their agenda for October when the planning board next meets. So that would deal with the issue as it relates to the town of Olive. We are in an ongoing discussion through the Emergency Services Department, myself and others, with respect to the location of facilities within the town of Shandaken. And we're working with one of the liaisons for the town board, of Mr. Drake from the town board, in terms of discussing those things. So that's an ongoing discussion And right now we don't have anything to tell them. We basically are telling them where we're looking to see how the towers will work out. Right? And we're working with our consultants, Motorola. And Motorola is trying to make sure that they do something called PAT. The first thing they do is, what's the coverage look like? The second thing they do is, what's the paths look like so that the towers can talk to each other. And we're currently sort of dialing in those paths to make sure that if certain locations are used, then the paths work that we can talk to all the towers. I will tell you that the Shandaken locations are, the best way to describe them are numerous. I think somewhere in the neighborhood of at least four new towers. And they're also difficult in terms of the location. We're looking at existing tower locations. We're also looking at some lands that are owned by the municipality. But in many instances, the roads to get to them could be very difficult because of the terrain. We have to climb a lot of hills up there in order to get where we can see things.
Excellent. Thank you. I know there's a lot of state and city land that makes that task of siting difficult as well. So keep us posted.
Thank you. Okay. So if there's no further discussion, I'm trying to multitask here. I will call the vote. All in favor of this resolution, raise your hand.
Aye.
Any in opposition? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. And Mr. Glosh, our clerk would like you to spell your name for her.
Certainly. First name is Udo, U-D-O. Last name's Glosh, G-L-O-S-C-H.
Thank you. And yes, Legislator Nolan.
And do we know the identity of 917-533-3208?
That is Tanya Garment.
Thank you.
And we also have, who joined us some time ago, was Legislator Green, which is perfect because the next resolution is 469, establishing capital project number 646, reuse innovation planning study. Legislator Nolan, you'd like to move this for discussion?
I'll move this for a discussion. Thank you.
All right.
And our welcome second... to Legislator Erner as well.
Yes, thank you. Okay, a second. We're going to have Legislator Stewart. Thank you. All right, Legislator Green, would you like to give us some information on this resolution? Okay. The background on this, of course, it's part of an ongoing zero waste implementation plan that's been worked on by a separate group meeting weekly. And in recognition of one of the ways to reduce waste is to reuse it. And also in memory of John Wackman, who began the repair cafes locally here in the Mid-Hudson Valley.
Yes. And also the Solarize campaigns as well.
Yes, that's yes. True. He did everything. He was an amazing.
He did a lot. Yes, he was a busy guy and a very sweet man.
Yes. So was this discussed at your energy and environment meeting, Legislator Stewart? Would you like to?
I was sure. Thank you. I was going to say that I could fill in if Mana Jo is not available. This passed unanimously at the energy and environment committee meeting. Basically, what this is, it's a large facility that would be all about taking usable and reusable materials out of the waste stream and keeping them out of landfills. So it's all about recycling. It's about repair. It involves lots of other interesting projects too. I mean, it's also deals with taking a lot of construction debris out. So we'd be looking for doors, windows, furniture, books, appliances, large appliances, small appliances. So it's taking all of those things out of the waste stream and repairing them and fixing them and then also selling them. So it's kind of like the full economic circle. In addition to that, it can also serve as a what do they call it? It's for micro. It's micro business, so it's like a business incubator. Yeah. So it allows people to set up, you know, small businesses in repairing these items and then reselling these items. There's also art spaces. It provides workforce training for people who want to get involved in these type of businesses. So, I mean, it really covers a lot of bases. And it's, like you said, kind of following up on what John Wackman started with the repair cafes and just takes it to a whole nother level. So I think it's a really great project and I fully support it.
Makes sense.
Okay. So do we have any other? Yes, Legislator Nolan?
I just want to mention, because I think it's a happy coincidence that there was a program on this type of facility and the need for it on NPR today. I don't have a link for it because I was traveling and heard it on the car radio, but it should be available if we want to search for it. And it essentially was describing how contractors want this because as they're demoing buildings, they find many items that they think are potentially of value, and it's heartbreaking to just crush all those things. Yeah. So I think this is a big thing to do, but again, it sounds like Ulster County is a leader here in terms of responding to the need both to make these materials more, have a longer lifespan, keep them out of the waste stream, and therefore protect our environment. So appreciate
it. Our reuse center in New Paltz, this was one of the biggest sellers too. You know, again, not only were the contractors thrilled that they could bring these items in, but you know, to buy a window or a door for $10 when they're going well over 100 now, was a big deal. So
yeah, it's just a win-win all around. So
okay. All right, so let's call the vote on this. I have a feeling I know what it'll be, but everyone in favor of this resolution?
Aye.
All in, okay. Any in opposition? Any abstentions? Wonderful. The next resolution, 471, is approving the execution of a contract for $73,570 entered into by the county with Sustainable Hudson Valley. Thank you, Nolan. Second. Legislator Stewart. Any discussion on this one? Legislator Stewart, was this this was in front of Energy and Environment last night too, or last week?
Yes, this was in front of it as well.
And this
The contract. You know what? I'm sorry, I'm blanking. I can't remember if the contract. Yeah. Was part of this or not. You'll have to forgive me on that.
Okay. All right.
Although I could go back through my notes if you...
It probably was.
Right? It was, yeah.
Okay.
They're putting together the... Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't recall. My apologies.
All right. Do we have any other comments or questions on this resolution? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Next, we have resolution number 472, amending capital project number 488, installation of shoulders along Route 299, towns of New Paltz and Gardner, transportation improvement project not on the state highway system.
I'll move it.
Should you move it? Thank you. Legislator Litz, Legislator Nolan. Do we have any questions? We have Director Masterson and we have Rob Parody here.
I was going to say this also came before the Energy Environment Committee and passed with no problems.
I think this is something everyone in the New Paltz area is looking forward to. So, okay. All right. So since there's no other questions, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Resolution number 474, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to enter into
473.
Did I miss 473? Oh, I thought I skipped one. Resolution number 473, authorizing right-of-way acquisition of certain real property for the purpose of installing shoulders along Route 299. Is that a tongue twister? Is there an error there?
No.
Okay. Motion. Nolan, no second. Blitz. Any questions or comments on this one? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Okay, 473. Now on to Resolution 474, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to enter into a lease agreement with Le Kingston Trois, LLC, for office space for the Ulster County Office of Employment and Training. Motion for discussion.
Move it.
Legislator Nolan, second. Legislator Litz. I do have a question. Okay, Legislator Nolan.
Could we have a description of this project from?
It's an extension of the existing lease agreement, I believe.
Oh, we're already there?
I believe so.
Yeah, we have.
I missed that. Okay.
Rob Parody. Oh, you're on mute. You're muted. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, this is just a lease renewal for that location.
Thank you.
Thank you. Then I am okay with it because we do have in the works a space study. You know, and I'd hate to start getting into all kinds of new leases before we had that finished. All right. Thank you.
Good point.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Next, resolution number 475, amending capital project number 596, Wilbur Bridge, Town of Warsing, and amending the 2022 capital fund budget.
So moved.
Second. Legislator Nolan, thank you. Any questions on this?
I didn't really have a question as so much as just a comment. I noticed that that the contractors are going to and the county are going to great lengths to protect the water quality while this is underway, and also that they are not doing work between October 1st and April 30th, and this is to protect the spawning trout. Granted, that might not be the most convenient thing for construction people, but I think that's an awesome thing for the trout. So I just wanted to, you know, point that out and, you know, say that is a good thing that we are, you know, being good stewards of the environment with this project. So.
And it's a DEC requirement. And if he went in there during that period of time, he'd get arrested.
So there you go.
So there you go.
Not only good, but smart.
Yes, both.
Okay.
Much like the bats and cutting down trees. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. We actually held off mowing the landfill to make sure that the birds had time to budget were out of there.
Nice.
All right. Okay. So there's no further discussion. I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Any abstentions? Thank you. Okay, so 476 would be the bond. 477, approving the execution of a contract for $1,387,059 entered into by the county with A. Colarusso and Son, Inc.
So moved.
Motion, okay. Second. Nolan. I did have questions on this. Mm-hmm. I would like to defer to Union Rep Mike Hamm. Because I had some questions about the PLA agreements. We had, earlier this year, we had actually held off on a contractor because we hadn't met the terms of these agreements. So, Mike?
Good evening. Thank you. So part of the problem here was underneath the apprenticeship program, we were right now, I think something's being brought. When's your next legislative meeting, Chair?
It's September 20th.
Okay.
Resolution with the construction apprenticeships are at the very end of our agenda as well.
Okay. But we argued in the past, they went into a 30% graduation rate as determined by Ulster County as part of their apprenticeship program. But, you know, the argument did come that when does the 30% kick in? Is it every 5 years? Is it every 10 years? Or is it since the inception of the program? So if you look at it, the Merit Alliance, which represents this contractor in question, the inception of that program was in 2007. So to date, they're stating that they've graduated, I believe the number was 3 of 7. So therefore, they're well within the 30% margin. Well, that's 3 of 7 since 2007. Now, in my opinion, the Merit Alliance is a pay-to-play program. You pay $10,000 and you now belong to the apprenticeship program. There's no training facility that I'm aware of. Okay. My program for the Operating Engineers Heavy Equipment Union, I graduate 15 to 18 people every year, and that's on a 4-year cycle. They just keep coming. So they come in, we train them for 4 years, and 15 to 18 get trained on the way out. So with that, you know, we sent a formal challenge letter in. I don't know if anybody on the legislature has seen it. We challenged this award and to Colarusso, and we stated that, you know, such a program, you know, doesn't meet, you know, is not meeting the criteria. With that, I have here, which I've sent it over to, I sent it over to Vicky, and I think Kenny Ronk will be addressing it at the legislative meeting. But in there, we were assuming still that, we were assuming right now, when I say we, I'm talking on behalf of the building trades, we were assuming that the last part of that had a statement in it and it said, in addition, each apprenticeship program must provide documentation verifying a minimum of 3 trade-specific graduates per calendar year for the last 5 years. And what that does, that forces this program or contractors to come up the rungs of the ladder. We shouldn't have to come down the rungs of the ladder as far as labor goes, okay? Especially when people, and everybody sees it, everybody stands up and everybody's in favor of apprenticeships and apprenticeship programs, okay? But this, once again, in my opinion, is an unscrupulous program. And they don't graduate people trade specific. They just don't do it. And companies come in with a, you know, and they just get the keys to the kingdom that way. Oh yeah, we have an apprenticeship program. So the letter we got in response to our letter basically was from Richie Williams, the attorney, and he denied our formal challenge based on that Colarusso was the lowest responsible bidder. We didn't argue if he was the lowest responsible bidder. We argued whether or not he was in compliance with the Ulster County apprenticeship language. So once again, to strengthen the language on that, and now, the only way I found out that this last sentence was not in the apprenticeship language, and I'm usually all over this in Ulster County, but the reason I found out about it is because of my challenge for this project. Nobody was forthcoming on coming to me and saying, hey, by the way, we never got that through. So
maybe five more.
We have an issue. We have an issue here, and we're not going to, we have to see it through now.
Mike, Legislator Nolan has her hand up. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Kath. I didn't see.
I was trying to share the screen, and I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, no trouble. I didn't want to interrupt Mr.
Hayes. No, go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah, I'm very sympathetic to this concern, I think you're reading it exactly right, that we want the apprenticeship programs, we want them to be real. I have a couple of questions, though, about this challenge and this project. and this bid. So several things that I would want to weave together here. One is I prefer to impose things on people going forward. And if this language wasn't clear previously, then to try to institute it for the past years would be more problematic for me than to say, from here on in, this language has to be, you have to have 3 graduates a year. But to say that nobody can bid on anything unless they did that in the past, when it wasn't clear that that was the standard, I have questions about whether that's fair. And I also have questions about whether we have contractors who can meet that standard, other than this lowest responsible bidder on this particular project. So I would be concerned to try to put that in. The language for the local law number 10 of 2022 was not included in our backup material.
And what I had up was the previous one that was number 5 of 2020.
So I think we need to see that language. You know, we're not down to that resolution yet, but we need to see that language before we can go forward on it. But I would love to work with the building trades on this to get real functioning apprenticeship programs. But I don't want to hold off on any projects that are in front of us right now because of a gap in the language that would leave a lot of people short. I don't have enough information to know whether we would be left short and how fair or unfair it might be to impose this kind of standard now retrospectively. So I don't know if you have considered any of those points and where that puts us in terms of moving forward on projects that would be good projects to do and could take a while if we're working this thing about the apprenticeships out first.
Well, you know, my point is exactly that. You're either in favor of an apprenticeship program or you're not. And you're either in favor of a bona fide program, you know, real program, or you're in favor of pay to play. Hey, we got the low numbers and we're good with it. So I've seen, you know, a lot of people say the unions have drive up the cost of a project. That's not true. Prevailing wage is prevailing wage. That's all there is to it. This kind of language ensures a lot of people come through the trades and are trained properly, safely, and they go home every night and they're not laying somewhere in a hospital bed. And that's a real concern of ours. With that being said, I do know, once again, I can speak on behalf of my own. You know, we don't, Local 825, the operating engineers, we invest $2.9 million annually into our apprenticeship program. We have 3 different locations. All right. There's equipment on everything. There's hands-on paid staff. There's 10, 12 trainers at every location, certified crane operators, certified foot. Everyone has a certification of some sort, and it's hands-on. These programs that you pay $10,000, all it does is appeases local municipalities and county, you know, requirements. That's what it does. You know, it disenfranchises, you know, building trades, we represent 10,000 people here. And it disenfranchises our workers also. And our contractors. And as far as limiting the pool of contractors, I don't think that's necessarily true. And only because I can tell you that I'm signatory to 4,100 contractors. And at any given time, if anyone came to me with a project and said, listen, we only have one bidder on this project. And I'd say, okay, what do you have? And they would tell me. At the end of the week, they would have 9 bidders. And that's because I have the availability to pick the phone up and call those people. But what happens here is when they know there's no level playing ground on this, they tend to pull the reins back and they say, why should we bid that? You know, why should we bid it? We know we're playing by the rules and we're going to get beat up by this guy because he doesn't have to pay by the rules because, you know, he's not mandated or told that he needs a a real program. And this language is just, you know, it's straight up language. I mean, to graduate somebody, if you're going to say you have an apprenticeship program and you're telling me the best you could do since 2007 was seven people. I mean, that's just my take on it. I'm a little biased. Don't get me wrong, but that's my approach on it. But, you know, I do agree, Kath, that, you know what? No one here in the Hudson Valley Ability Trades is looking to hinder the progress of any work. But what I'm trying to say is we really need clarification moving ahead on these contracts and specifically what's required in the apprenticeship language. And people are kind of skipping that. They're just skipping over that. And it's becoming, I became a watchdog on all these projects. And, you know, I already got a full boat. You know, traveling around watching, you know, 400 jobs. But, you know, that there's just got to be the checks and balances. You know, I mean, if we're going to approve resolutions and laws, I mean, somebody should be checking into this and following up on stuff like this. So, but I don't want to drag this out. You know, I'm looking at Herbie over there, keeps looking at his watch. So
I'm not looking at my watch.
I'm kidding, Herb.
He's sitting at the desk. He's working.
I appreciate the time you gave me to speak. Thank you.
Legislator Nolan.
Yes, thank you again, Mr. Hamm. You clarified some of my issues, and you brought us important information here. I think that what you're telling me, as I hear it, is that we do have programs that are available to contractors in Ulster County that produce. That offer real apprenticeships, that are graduating people and they have the required training, and that we would want contractors that are doing work in Ulster County to work with those types of institutions rather than with people that don't have a strong record of graduating people, and that there are potentially questions about the qualifications of people who come out. That you sold me on that. And if we can get that language into local law number 10, you know, that would be something to fix this. It seems to me that some of the contractors who may have used other apprenticeship programs in the past still have workers who come from Ulster County and have people that would like to be working on these projects. So my inclination is to move the projects that are existing in the pipeline along. But by having this conversation, you know, put people on notice that this is where Ulster County is heading and put in a tighter qualification so that we can get contractors having apprenticeships available to people and trained apprentices that are really going to be able to do the job. So I appreciate the conversation, the alert, and, you know, flagging some opposition to individual projects raises the level of alert on that. So I think that's you're doing what needs to be done, and I hope you might think that I'm doing the same.
I do.
So just to clarify Legislator Stewart.
Again, this is kind of more of a comment. I was just going to say, I mean, I strongly support unions. I strongly support education, the trade school education. I think apprenticeship programs are awesome. And it sounds like this particular Ashley Mechanical has really not followed through on its stated goals. And I think that maybe not voting in favor of this project might send a stronger signal. Than just simply saying, let's fix it in the future. And that's kind of what I'm inclined to do at this point.
Legislator Litz?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, we instituted an apprenticeship program. We should be keeping track of that. We shouldn't pass laws that we just pass and don't do anything about. But we also have to think about the legal ramifications of a contract that's been put out, an RFP's been put out. There's a responsible low bidder. And basically, not to award this, we're going to have to say that this particular contractor is not a responsible bidder and go to another bidder. And we'll have to look at his stuff. And we're opening ourselves into a lawsuit. I think what we need to do is change this going forward. At this point in time, open ourselves up to a lawsuit that he's not a responsible bidder because he's using that training. We're going to go to court, and we better gear up because I'm sure it'll cost us all a lot of money. Let's fix the problem. I don't know what language is in this contract. Hopefully the county attorney has looked at all of that. And I don't think the county attorney should be telling us to go ahead and award a contract if it's not meeting the minimum requirements of the law that we passed. So we should be talking to the county attorney's office. They shouldn't be recommending anything for, approval by the legislature if it hasn't been vetted and it has not gone through the test of whether it meets the requirements, the minimum requirements of the laws. That's a bigger problem than this issue.
Can I comment? Herbie, I agree with you. Now, when I read the letter that came from Rich Williams, which is the attorney up there, once again, it didn't address the apprenticeship language. It addressed that he was the lowest responsible bidder and that they felt as though moving ahead was in the best interest of Ulster County, basically. But in there, it said, as per specific, specific language that was in the bid docs. Now, I don't currently have those bid docs. I've sent them over to everybody else, but I agree with what you're saying. Depending on how it was spelled out in there for the time of bid, mm-hmm. It does open you up to a lawsuit. Sure it does. I mean, everybody gets sued now. That's the normal thing here.
I've never done that.
Yeah, I know. You have. I have. We all know. So, but once again, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. I just want to just make a note of that, okay?
Well, what I'm saying is, just to respond, we have a resolution in front of us that the county attorney says he's the lowest responsible bidder, and either he didn't do his homework or he shouldn't be sending it to us for approval. And if we don't pass this, and it has no reflection on the contractor or the contract or anything, we operate under a system where the lowest responsible bidder is awarded a contract. And the county attorney should be vetting that to make sure he is the lowest responsible bidder, not just on number, but responsible. And not to approve this means we have determined as a legislator that this particular contractor is not a responsible bidder. And I know for a fact there'll be a lawsuit because once that gets out, other municipalities, the state, and everybody else, when someone is found to be not a responsible bidder, well, they get put on a blacklist and they don't get any work. So you're taking the livelihood away from this contractor and all the people that work for him. And he has to use union labor because this is a Taylor law. But he has to pay prevailing wage is what I
think. Right. Once again,
he has to pay prevailing wage. But, we got to watch. We got to have our ducks in a row. If we're not, we're in for big ticket dollars that the taxpayers of the county are going to have to pay in a lawsuit. So maybe we should kick this back to the county attorney and say, hey, did you do your homework? Because there's things that are being questioned here. And if he's not following the law, he's not the lowest responsible bidder. And then we just don't award him the contract. But I will tell you, you're putting a man or a company out of business, and I'm certainly not, they're not going to take that laying down. So we need to do our homework. the county attorney, he needs to do his homework. He shouldn't be sending stuff here in resolutions if it's not been vetted and gone through the legal process reviewing the contract.
Well, Herb, really quick, just so you know, I brought the letter up from the rejection letter from Rich Williams. So they did address it, and they said your formal objection and challenge to the award above is refused. It's denied. And it says they were the lowest responsible bidder for the project and met the advertised specifications for contractor qualified to bid the project. So
see, there you go.
That's what I was saying.
We're working under maybe an old law that needs to be revised. So
thank you.
We got to watch going backwards. We need to go forward, but we got to watch going backwards.
I agree. I'm agreeing. I'm putting this out there because once again, this is not something that's just the first time that's happened to me. If you guys go back in history, you'll see that, you know, I challenge, I foil, I pull payroll. I'm consistent. You know, I mean, that's what I get paid to do.
Yeah, it's your job.
And I get paid to do that. And I'm as much as I would hate, I hate having a good success rate, but I always do, because in my line of work, you'd rather have everybody playing by the rule, you know?
Yeah, you have to.
We had Legislator Erner had his hand up, Legislator Stewart, and then Legislator Nolan. Are you in queue? Yeah, okay. Legislator Erner.
No, thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to say that, you know, I certainly appreciate Legislator Litt's insight into this, and I certainly, A, don't want the county to be sued, and B, I also don't want to put, you know, some private contractor out of business. So I was wondering if we can just move that we push this back until we have further consultation with.
You want to take no action next month?
That would be my vote on this.
I'm kind of leaning that way too. If there's two no votes and two yes votes, we're going to deadlock it, and then it'll be held up that way. Legislator Nolan.
Yes, thank you, Chair Petit. So I think the reason that this law didn't get written better than 2005, if that was attempted and it didn't get forward, is it really is an issue of how you determine what counts as an acceptable apprenticeship program. And so I'd like to work with the building trades on that. Certainly in the medical realm, if people aren't doing something regularly, they don't have the same skills. So a institution is graduating three people every 15 years it doesn't have the same kind of experience and ongoing continuity of instruction that someplace that is graduating three people every month would have. So I think that could be one of the qualifications. We probably need to look at some others. But if our purchasing office, which has been doing this a long time, put this out with whatever we have on the books, and that was how it was bid, then this contractor has the right under law to have the bid respected. I don't mind going to court over something. I don't like going to court over something where I expect to lose. And I think we would lose on this. And I think it's a good project that we should move forward. So I think the discussion motivates me to address the issue, but as Legislator Litz is saying, going forward, and I don't think we should hold this up. I think we should go ahead and pass it. It's quite a bit of money, so it would go in front of Ways and Means, and if we find out that the purchase documents went out incorrectly or something, then we have to figure out what to do with that. But even that could expose the county to quite a bit of legal liability, financial liability, if we put it out incorrectly and now try to change it after the fact. That's
Legislator Litz?
Yeah, through the chair, can we ask DPW, is there a time frame connected to this contract? Is there going to be an issue with a delay? Or, I mean, some contract says, you know, your bid is good for 30 days. And if we hold it up, that bid's not good. And then he turns around and says, you held it up for no reason. So is anybody from DPW here prepared?
Yeah, we have Director Masterson and we have Rob Parody.
Okay.
So I don't think they're going to be held up. If they start this fall, they'd have to do a winter shutdown anyway. I don't have a tight schedule with me.
Is there a requirement in the contract to start by a certain date?
No.
Okay. And is there a requirement in the contract that he has to, his bid numbers are good for a certain period of time? Because
I'm sure they'd want to get, if there's steel to be involved, I'm sure they're going to want to get steel ordered. But I have to try to check back on that.
All right. Because, I mean, it depended on the agency, you know, the Thruway had a different setup on their contracts than DOT did. And there's been some issues in the past. And I didn't read this contract. And I really don't want to because there's thousands of contracts out here. So I got enough to do. But the county attorney's office is required to read these contracts. And they're required to review them before they release them to go to a resolution before the legislature. So somebody should be talking to the county attorney.
Yeah, my feeling is I think at this point I'd like to see the bid request that went out, and I would like to review the two past PLA agreements from 2000. I thought it was 15, or maybe it was 5, and then the last one that was passed in 2020, which basically amended what we have on the books now. I apologize for holding it up, but I do have questions. Now we could go ahead and vote on it as well, but I at this point would be a no vote. Legislator Nolan.
Yes, I could understand a no vote, but I would like us to go ahead and move this forward. I think that what's being challenged here is our law in Ulster County and not the purchasing department's bid documents or this bidder's response, but our system doesn't ask for the right things. And the purchasing department couldn't have done it another way unless we changed that. I mean, they could be, it could have raised issues that they were unjustly excluding somebody if the requirement is to show that you have an apprenticeship program and it doesn't specify the years. So I don't think the problem is this contract. And I think to hold this up tonight doesn't serve us well, especially since we can ask for the bid documents and review them before this goes to Ways and Means. It turns out there is something that's inside this, then yes, we should do something about it. But I think it's our law, not this particular application of our law, that is really the issue. So I think
call the vote.
Yeah, I think if you can call the issue, we'll see how the votes fall out on that.
Okay. All right, very good. Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I mean, I think we got to look into this and change the law going forward. But I honestly think if we have a contract before us that has been vetted by our legal department and everything else, holding it up, the only way you can hold it up is find this particular contractor as non-responsive and therefore cannot bid. And I think that just opens us up to a whole host of challenges. I think Kathy's got a good idea. We need to move forward, but we need to change the law and make those requirements in there. If we think we need to have 3 graduates a year or 10 graduates a year or 3 graduates every 5 years, whatever we come up with, it should be part of the law. We shouldn't leave it open-ended. So my vote on this is going to be a yes.
Okay. All opposed?
Okay, I have a question. So if the two of us vote no, mm-hmm. Laura, then what happens with this?
It's denied. It's denied, and there'd be a motion
to discharge.
Yeah, and the concern here is, too, I mean, we were tasked by the chair, at least all of the committees, to, you know, essentially, if we had concerns, not to kick the can down the road and just leave it and have it end up with Ways and Means. So, you know, and generally, if I feel like my questions have been answered, I'm comfortable, I'll, you know, kick it over to Ways and Means. In this particular instance, I'm not. You know, if it's critical that we get it done before session, we can always take the time to look into it, attend a Ways and Means committee meeting, and then do a special meeting just before session. But I'm not comfortable passing it right now.
I realize we're at voting rather than discussion, but right. Can I respond to that?
Absolutely.
You know, I think it is a better policy in general to take our decisions here rather than rely on the fact that there's another look. But I would rather pass this forward and not have to have a special meeting to do that on something that's been put out by our purchasing department, bid on by our usual process, and had a bid that's compliant with everything as far as we know come in and not award it. I don't see what we have as a challenge to this contract. I do see we have a challenge to our law. And I think that if we keep those separate, I'm not prepared at all to move forward on the local law number 10 tonight, just because I haven't seen any of the language. But I would be very happy to hustle that and get it in place so our purchasing department has a better law to be working under. But this contractor and this resolution are getting caught up in a brouhaha, in my view, that where we have no justification for it. There's no information that Mr. Hamm has brought forward that the bidder failed to comply with the terms of the bid request. So what is our grounds for holding this up? That we don't like our own local law? That the logic here, I think, needs to stay on the law, and we need to be fair to a contractor who's participating in our usual system and has done projects in our county with local labor that have been beneficial to our community. So I'd like all our contractors to know what our requirements are before they bid, not us change the parameters after the fact.
But we have overturned other resolutions and contracts, specifically, I think it was ING, Eng, because they didn't have these agreements in place. So I don't know what the difference was between the way that went out for bid and the way this went out for bid, or if there was any difference. Legislator Litz.
As it stands now, and we haven't finalized the vote, it'd be 2-2, which means it does not go forward. It gets denied because it's not passed by a majority of those present in the quorum, which means it won't go to Ways and Means, which means I guess it starts all over again. And I don't know what DPW would do, reject the contract, re-let the bid. I have no idea what they would do. But I think Kathy brought up a good point. We have to have grounds by which we would deny this resolution. And right now the grounds are he met the current requirements under the contract that he signed, but we don't like it because we want it to be something different. And I can tell you in my 47 years working in contracts with DOT and the Thruway Authority, it always goes by what's bid on that particular date in that contract. Even though specifications change, you can't require the contractor to do something that was not in his contract. So, you know, unless we can point to something in his bid, in his contract, that he did not meet the minimum requirements to bid on, I think we're pushing ourselves in a position where we're costing the county a lot of money with no and no reasoning behind it.
Hmm. Wow. I wish Dean Fabiano were here.
Well, and Dean, you know, worked for the Saugerties DPW for his entire career and knows a lot about contracts and everything. So, I mean, he would be a good resource.
Yeah. You know what? I guess I am going to reluctantly vote in favor of this in light of what Legislator Litz and Legislator Nolan have said. Although, if I went with my heart and my gut, I would vote against this resolution. But so I will be voting in favor, although I'm don't like this at all.
Well, let's make a commitment to fix what we don't like.
And I think that's a great idea. Yeah. I think we need to have contracts that have, you know, actual, if we have talking about apprenticeship programs, we need to have an actual apprenticeship program.
Agreed.
But we do. It was passed way back. Here's my question. Where is it now and why isn't it being included? I mean, our contracts also say that any of our vendors have to pay a living wage. So did we suddenly drop the, the labor agreement?
No. What we need to do is you order a car and you say, I want good mileage. But you don't say you want 28 miles to the gallon as a minimum. You want good mileage. So the interpretation of what a good program is or what good mileage is on a car is open to everybody. Mike, who has a lot of experience, and this is his job, he thinks it should be higher than 3 in 7 years. And I agree with that statement. But in the law, it doesn't meet it. It doesn't say a requirement. So we got to tighten up the law. And if you want a car that gets over 30 miles to the gallon, when you order one in the contract, you say this car shall meet a minimum of 30 miles per gallon. You just can't say we want to get good high mileage with this car.
Okay, thank you. So it looks like the vote is 3 in favor, 1 opposed, and any abstentions. Okay, thank you.
I have to say this vote has tortured me more than any vote since the gas tax. So.
Oh, come on. There's some ARPA votes that have raised some consternation.
Yeah,
that is true. So.
Well, and have some further discussion of this on multiple different levels.
Yes.
Because I think we should all feel good about it at the end of the day. And I think that if there is any new information that comes forward that we haven't heard here tonight, then I would be happy to switch things around and say, no, we shouldn't go forward. I just didn't hear any of that in front of us.
Can we get feedback from the attorney, from the county attorney on this
sure.
prior to session?
Yeah.
Sure. And I think everything Kathy just said goes under new business.
Okay. All right. The next
interrupt one. Quickly. Could the phone that ends in 2303 please state and spell their name?
Okay. They're muted.
Later.
Yeah.
I
can help with that. I know who that is.
Oh. That's not Tanya, right?
No, that's Michael Kadransky.
Oh, excellent. Okay, thank you. You'll have to ask him how to spell his name when we get to you. All right, thank you.
I think I have it. Thank you.
All righty. Next is resolution number 478, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $280,000 entered into by the county with Creighton Manning Engineering. Motion to move for discussion.
So moved.
Nolan, seconded by Litz. Any questions or comments on this one? Hearing none, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Next, we have resolution number 479, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $71,453, entered into by the county with Ashley Mechanical, Inc. Motion for discussion.
I'll move it.
Legislator Nolan, second. Legislator Litz, would you like the second?
No, because I am going to.
I'll second that, Chair Petit.
Thank you. Any questions or comments on this resolution? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Three in favor. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Legislator Litz.
For the reason of?
Employment.
He's a busy man. Next, resolution number 480, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $25,000, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county with Johnson Controls, Inc. Motion for discussion. Legislator Litz, seconded by Nolan. And this is what service do they provide?
These are chillers as part of the HVAC systems, I think. But I had a question on this as to why all these chillers are going into disrepair or failing.
Director Masterson or
Ron? Where are these chillers located?
These are at the...
At the law enforcement center.
This is just P&M work.
Oh. So it's regularly they have to be replaced and...
They're being serviced.
Okay. Thank you.
That's all right. So this is maintenance work on the chillers.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I had read it that there was a problem with them too. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Hearing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Resolution number 481, approving the execution of a contract for $155,500, entered into by the county with Bergman Associates Architects, Engineers, Landscape Artists, and Surveyors. Motion for discussion.
So moved.
Legislator Stewart, seconded by Legislator Nolan. Thank you.
I know I read the resolution, but what's this in relationship? I forgot.
This is a resolution for a full facility space needs study.
Oh, yeah, space needs. Okay. All right.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Long time in the making. That's great. Any other questions or comments? Right, hearing none, I will call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Now, the next resolution, I will open it for discussion, but there was no attachment. It's resolution number 490, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 10 of 2022, a local law amending the code of the county of Ulster in relation to construction apprenticeships to be held on Tuesday, October 18th. Motion for discussion. Legislator Nolan, second.
Second.
Legislator Stewart. Since there is no attachment, I'm thinking I would prefer to see it, no action taken, but Legislator Nolan?
I agree. This is the law that we need, that we just spent some time discussing how we need it. And so I think we have to have it in front of us to make sure it's ready for public hearing. So I'd like to have this move forward quickly, but don't see how to do that without having the law for our review here tonight. And it looks like it's being brought forward to move to public hearing by Legislator Ronk. If he's working on this, I'd be happy to work with him. This is important, as we just said, that we actually have not only a good mileage car, but that the good mileage is defined by us in a way that we are going to get miles per gallon that satisfy us at a high level.
Thank you. Legislator Erner. Oops. You pressed your video instead of your, there you go.
thank you, Chair Petit. I was able to find language of the proposed law on our legislature's website.
Ah.
And I just sent the link to the clerk Vialba. I can't. Oh, I could send it to you too. Oh, thank you.
Oh, we shouldn't have done that.
Do you need me to share my screen?
Actually, that would be great, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I still don't know if looking at it quickly, if I'd be ready to vote on it, but yeah.
Can everybody see?
Yes. Thank you.
All right.
Such apprenticeship graduating rate at 30% over the last 5 years is determined New York State Department of Labor. Conditions for a program must provide documentation verifying minimum 3 trade-specific graduates per calendar year for the last 5 years. Mr. Hamm.
Yeah, so is this the only change? Is this the only bold?
Yeah, usually the changes are in bold.
Yeah, and that's it? That's the only one we're seeing? Because I don't see anything else. Okay, perfect.
Could you hold the screen steady at the changed language, please?
Yeah, we were just going through real quick to see if there was any other.
Is that going up and down now?
I stopped moving it.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
There might be a little bit of a lag.
I think my cursor was moving it. Sorry.
And I'm looking at it on my screen now. Thank you, Legislator Erner, for pointing out that it was on the webpage. And yes, that seems to be the only changes I see. Is Mike Hamm still with us?
I am.
You are? Okay. Is this the language that you're looking for?
That is correct.
This will satisfy the labor unions and the trades?
You know, Herb, one good thing about a negotiation is nobody ever leaves the table satisfied, correct? So
you're starting to sound like some contractors I've sat across the table from.
I'm getting too old.
Slater Nolan.
Yeah. This change is such, and we're talking about scheduling a public hearing, that I could be persuaded to vote for this to move it along. Yeah. I would have the question for Mr. Hamm and the trades, whether this is the only change that we need and whether this change will really achieve the result that we want, that companies that meet this requirement are actually companies that the county should be doing business with. And I guess that's just asking in a broader way the question that Legislator Litz was raising, how are the trades going to look at this? But I would like to have some conversation, and doesn't have to be tonight, about how we make sure that the apprentices themselves are treated well and that they come out of programs prepared to do the job. And this requirement would seem to me to be a part of that. And if it's sufficient, maybe that's what we do for now. And then we look at whether or not we've done everything we need to do. And a public hearing can give us some feedback on that as well. So if it's important to move it forward tonight, I would be inclined towards that.
Legislator Stewart and then Legislator Litz.
If we want to get more apprenticeships, more apprentices through the program, I mean, why do we have to limit it to 3? Do we have the ability to increase that number, or would that have to go through attorneys and everything else?
I mean, I tend to agree. Why isn't it on everything? Why are there limits? But okay.
Can I answer?
Absolutely.
What I believe.
Yes.
Anyway? So, this is low bar stuff right here. once again, you know, I mean, I don't have a 30% graduation rate. I have an 86% retention rate and 100% graduation rate. Okay. Like many of the other trades. As far as the three trade specific graduates per calendar year for the last 5 years, we also didn't want to be overly punitive to someone, you know, or any other contractors coming that way. We were looking just to make their program that they all sign on to, once again, come up the rungs of the ladder and be a bona fide, in the eyes of the state, they're a bona fide apprenticeship program. We're saying be a real apprenticeship program. You know, we're saying, you know, train the proper people. And, you know, you can't say we're 100, you know, we could say we were 100% graduates over our inception for Local 825, which is 1951. I mean, you know, all we had to do is graduate one guy. I got 100%. And we're just trying to say, hey, three is where we want. For me, personally, this is a Band-Aid. That's a Band-Aid to see if they adhere to it and see if they're going to step their game up. But that, you know, I wasn't looking to have 10, 20, you know, we weren't looking for that when I say, you know, like the trades, but we were looking to have something, you know, to make them actually graduate the people, you know?
Legislator Stuart, you asked your question.
Can we say 10 or 9 or can we just, I mean, I'm just not quite sure how best to proceed here. And also I'm wondering why we aren't paying Mr. Ham's organization the $125,000 to do apprenticeship programs if is there so much better than what we're actually paying for?
So Mr. Stewart, to answer your question, I believe if you inflate that number from 3 to 5 to 7, once again, you have an adverse effect on a lot of multiple trades, not just mine. You know what I mean? I mean, me, I fare the storm. You know, I'm a pretty big, we're a pretty big fish in the water. But some of the other trades maybe, and some of the other programs, and some very, very good contractors that are out there that may or may not be signatory to me, you know, but play by the rules. They, you know, that, you know, you don't want to overly affect them. And this number, I think this number holds it down to serve an action. You know, there's got to be action taken to achieve that. And that's not out of grasp for anybody. They just have to do some real work. You know, they have to put something into their program.
Legislator Litz.
Well, you know, the man who has the most expertise was just talking. And if he feels this is even though it may be a small step or a minor step, it is in the right direction. If we don't at least vote to have the public hearing in October, the new law is not going to pass until after the first of the year. And then all the contracts that are let between now and then are going to be under the old law. Mm-hmm. So we're not making anything better. I think this is a move in the right direction. If Mike feels and the sponsor, Kenny Ronk, feels that this would help move us ahead in the right direction, I'd be willing to vote on this tonight as long as you know, our labor friend says this is what would be a good thing to move forward. And the sponsor says, you know, this is what I'm putting up as a sponsor. And let's face it, we enact it goes to public hearing. And, you know, a month later or December, we vote on a resolution. It gets passed. And next March, we say, you know, let's make it 6 instead of 3. We always have that option, you know. And consequently, if conversely, if this turns out that, oh my God, nobody can meet this requirement, well, we can drop it back to one or four or whatever number it needs to be. But to take no action just means we're just kicking this farther down the road, which means more contracts will be let and awarded and signed with the old law, which is what we feel is needs to be changed here.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan?
Thank you.
Now I can see everybody.
Thank you. So I think this sets a floor, not a ceiling. Certainly, other companies can do more than this. And it sounds like a reasonable floor from somebody who knows this arena very well. I am a little worried about small contractors and whether a small contractor can meet this standard of having three graduates every year, and whether anybody who's willing and actually could do a good job with one person every year and somehow meet the 30% graduation might meet 100% graduation, but not be able to handle a large number. But I wouldn't hold this up. And so maybe we need a lead-in period, or maybe we need an exemption or something that graduates this based on the size of the company, the number of their employees, so that we don't exclude small businesses from having the opportunity to bid on and be awarded contracts in Ulster County. Having said that, that would be my comments, in response to whatever else we hear at a public hearing. And so, as I said earlier, I'm not opposed to moving this forward. I'm just not sure this is really achieving all the ends we want to achieve. So I do hope there'll be some willingness to continue to work on this as we get the public involved and as I learn more about the size of companies and how that affects what they can do with apprentices. It's a new topic for me, so I need education, and I will seek out Mr. Hammond and others for that between now and the public hearing and our further work on this law.
Legislator Stewart.
So forgive my ignorance about this particular issue. I mean, dealing with labor negotiations is something completely out of my wheelhouse. But is there anything that would prevent the county from once we get this particular law fixed, would there be anything that would prevent the county from negotiating with the union directly to run the apprenticeship programs moving forward?
So, that may be a tough overhaul because we're all different trade specifics in the Laborers Local 17 had its own program. I have my program. So on and so forth. So really with the county and the municipalities, now correct me if I'm wrong, but the municipalities here for the county, that's just Ulster County employees, correct? What heading do they run underneath? Herb, you would know. What's the local?
I think it's CSEA.
CSEA. I know that Local 17, the Laborers Local Control, Town of Ulster, a lot of us, for liability reasons, don't get wrapped up into going outside our lane. You know what I mean? If you belong to 825 and the operating engineers and you're a book carrying guy, you have access to our stuff at all times. So they probably wouldn't open it up and go outside of that, only because it kind of muddies the water for us. We stay pretty clean. We're what is known as a hoisting and portable union, which is bulldozers, backhoes, cranes. We're getting into some crazy stuff anymore, but everything we do is geared up specifically for that. It's not a composite crew kind of entity,
And correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a requirement for the contractor to be signatory to a training program. If the county contracts with the an entity to provide the training, we're hamstringing that contractor to use only who we say he can use, And I don't know if we want to go down that road, because then we're controlling the contract rather than the contractor controlling the contract. And that opens us up to a lot of legal issues.
Okay.
You can buy any car you want as long as it's a Ford.
It gets 28 miles a gallon. all right. So thank you for the discussion. I'm a lot more comfortable. And thank you, Chelsea, for pulling it up so we can see the language. It's not, it's significant, but not substantial. So, so if there's no further discussion, I'll call the vote on this.
Aye.
Aye. All in favor? Aye. Yes. Any opposed? Any abstentions?
And I'm sure that if there's any additions or anything that comes up, I would guarantee my bottom dollar, unless he's on vacation, Mr. Ham will be at the public hearing.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for
being here. Always good to see you, Mike.
Notice, yes. Okay, so is there any new business? Yes.
I just wanted to bring one thing up. One of the things that one of the projects that I've been working on is to try to get bus shelters built. And I know that Legislator Petit has been really great in working on this as well. And as well as others, I sent out an email to a bunch of folks, including Lauren Johnson, Director Johnson, who is here with us tonight, and also Deputy Executive Chris Kelly, and also Director Dennis Doyle, about moving forward with the county taking over the design and construction and maintenance of bus shelters. And I was told that this is something the county does want to do, but that this is something that they UCAT feels they need to get their routes squared away, and also in light of, you know, the recent changes with free bus fares, that they feel like they need to kind of review the routes before they start figuring out where they want to build bus shelters. And so it was my understanding from Christopher Kelly, you know, that this project is kind of put on the back burner for now. But wow, I think it's something that the county really needs to look at. I mean, if we're trying to increase ridership and encourage people to use public transportation, having them stand out in, you know, blizzards and rain and, you know, 100 degree heat is not the way to go about doing that. And so I look forward to moving on this issue once we get the go ahead from the county executive's office and also from UCAT. So yeah, that's it.
And we need to refer to it as county sponsored fare and not free bus fare, because free bus fare takes away our federal funding.
True. Yes. Thank you for that clarification, Legislator Lutz.
So given that comment, that would really go under old business. So we'll open up the Special Transportation Working Group to Legislator Erner. And yes, definitely the bus shelters and a hub and uniform signage to go along with that. That yes. is all part of this conversation. So Legislator Erner, we will open up our Special Transportation Working Group.
Laura, I had a commitment at 7:30. I'm well beyond, so I'm going to have to.
Boy, are you in trouble? I hope it's not your daughter.
I'm in trouble every day. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Care. Thank you, everybody. It's been
Thanks,
fun.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah, bye-bye.
And Legislator Erner, as we open it up, I do have at least one person that had some concerns about the transportation as it is now, you know, our shortage of drivers and cancellation of routes. So, you know, as you open up the meeting, I hope you'll also open it up to that discussion. And you are on, okay, now you're off mute. Thank you.
Oh, certainly. Thank you, Chair Petit. Thank you to the committee for continuing to hold this discussion. Chair Petit, I had sent you a draft proposed agenda and with a couple modifications, but do you think it would help to just share that out at this point to everyone present? Okay. Clerk Theaba, did you have that as well?
Yes, I can share my screen.
Okay.
And I will pull up your, right here. Can everybody see this?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And so, as usual, let's just begin with everyone briefly introducing themselves. And again, this is a discussion about all topics in transportation that our county legislature could deal with policy around. So I can start. I'm Phil Erner, the legislator for District 6, which is part of the city of Kingston. And I'll pass it to Mr. Hamm. Are you sticking around for this discussion?
Mr. Erner, I'm going to stay on as long as I can before I have to take this call. Yes.
Yes. No, it's on the kitchen counter. It's just a clear.
Okay. Did you want to make further introduction for yourself, or you can otherwise pass it to the next person?
I'm sorry.
Oh, would you care to further introduce yourself and why you're in this discussion, and then pass to the next person?
My name is Mike Hamm. I'm a business representative for the Operating Engineers, Local 825, and I'm just here as an observer. How's that? To hear what all you guys have put together here.
Great, thank you. okay, I'll send it over to Tanya Garment next, and then please pass to the next person.
Hi, Tanya Garment. Really glad to be here. I'll pass it on to. I live in the city of Kingston. I'm a member of RUDA. I really think that transportation is important to be. It's important that it's equitable. Everybody can't afford to drive a car, and we've got a lot of work to do towards making it such. I'll pass it on to Ella.
I can't believe I caught this because I thought I was gonna maybe get the end of it, but I guess
can't hear you so well.
Hello, can you hear me?
A little better.
That's a little better.
Okay, this is the meeting starting right now because I thought I was missed the whole thing. But anyway, I'm Ella. Nice to see everybody, and I'm just a transportation. I'm interested in just learning more about how everything is working and what people are up to. So that's me. Thank you so much. And I'm going, I don't know who's gone yet. Laura, have you gone yet?
I have not. Thank you. My name's Laura Petit. I'm the legislator representing Esopus District 8. And, you know, during my travels to some of the more remote part of the community, transportation was one of the biggest concerns, especially as everything's getting more and more expensive and people are giving up their vehicles. They need a way to get into work and to shop. And so, yes, and we're going to fix that. I will pass it to Udo Glosch.
Thank you, Chairman Pettit. Udo Glosch. Interested citizen with the transportation dilemmas that we have in Ulster County, and just trying to follow up on what you guys are doing. Thank you.
I can jump in. I'm Eric Stewart, Ulster County legislator representing Marbletown and Hurley, District 18.
And I can jump in as well. Kathy Nolan, Ulster County Legislator, representing District 22, which is Olive, Shandaken, Denning, and Hardenburg out in the western part of Ulster County. And I have another commitment at 8, so maybe I can say here that I'm interested in multimodal transportation and low carbon transportation, particularly been involved with the rail trail construction and networks in Ulster County. We had two resolutions tonight that I think were important for transportation. The Kingston Rail Trail moving forward under federal funding, which is a big project, but linking the city of Kingston out to the O&W Rail Trail along Route 209. So a project we've been waiting for a long time. And also I'm going to include the project to put shoulders and expand shoulders on Route 299 in Gardner, making some of our roads more friendly for transit by other than motor vehicles is an important part of what we're doing. There are initiatives like Safe Routes to School that I've worked on. And my current project is to develop a policy for e-bikes, electric bikes, on county trails. The state and federal government have regulations for the use of e-bikes on roads. I have to talk with the county about whether the county has already regulations about the or laws governing electric bikes on roads. But we have a patchwork of different approaches on the trails throughout the county. So if anybody's particularly interested in any of those things, they can look to me. And my apologies for dropping out shortly before 8 to host another meeting.
Yeah, I'm sorry it was a long meeting. I was looking forward to your presentation, but do you have documents that you could pass along to the members of this group?
I'm sorry, no. I've been dealing with a family member who was injured, and I haven't been able to put anything together. Forgot that I had been asked to carry this over from our last meeting. So if I could have another redo, I will put something together for you. I did call people's attention the last meeting to the state of the county, state of the trails in the county. It's a very comprehensive report, and the Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee, which meets the third Monday of every month, is doing an update on that. So people are welcome. It's an open meeting. We'll be in person now that we're shifting our meetings all to in person, has been in person a lot. And I think that's next week. So anybody from this working group is certainly welcome to come and share perspectives. We do talk about traffic safety for pedestrians and cyclists, bicyclists for the most part. We haven't really done very much with transit, although we have tried to connect with transit to the trail network system. And we've had good cooperation with Ulster County Area Transportation for that. And so I guess I could pass this to Director Johnson. Can't see if he's still with us, but in case he is.
Thank you, Legislator Nolan. Director Johnson for UCAT, Public Transportation. Just here as a big ear listening in to you, some of the ongoing concerns that are still prevalent within our network, and also looking for reasonable solutions that we could explore as we are consciously making some significant improvements day by day. I'll pass it along to, I think, Ms. Cheryl Snyder. Snyder,
yep. Hi. Hello, everybody. My name is Cheryl Snyder. I live in the town of Rosendale. I'm citizen activist at large. I am very, seriously, very concerned about equity, climate, clean air and water, travel safety. Statistics are horrendous right now on a number of deaths, motor vehicle deaths in this country. It's like at an all-time high for, you know, it's been decades, many decades high. And right here, you know, in our own county, we've had several vehicle slash pedestrian deaths. Yeah, I'm concerned about it all. But mostly I want to advocate, a change, in our universe. Being able to get around has been shown, by studies by major universities that, it improves quality of life, it improves people's ability to hold jobs, to be able to stay healthy, go to doctors, get educations, and live life, and, you know, not just barely survive, but be able to build a work life and a family's thrive. So I'm all about it, and it's part of a bigger vision, and I will pass it on to Pixel 3 AXL.
Well, Pixel 3AX, oh, thank you.
Sorry, I'm just joining.
That sounds like Mark. Is that Mark?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. I was just joining. I didn't hear anything before.
We're asking you to introduce yourself. It's just the beginning of the meeting.
My name is Mark Shepperton, and I'm a rider on the UCAT buses.
Thank you, Mr. Shepperton. Let's go with Michael Kadransky, 917-470-2303, please. Michael, we'll come back to you. Who else hasn't gone yet? We have Clerk Villalba.
Are you looking through the participants list? Do you need Chelsea to take the screen back down?
I think I was just asking Chelsea to go ahead.
Hello, my name is Chelsea Villalba. I am a legislative employee of the county, and I am here clerking the meeting. And a big supporter of public transportation, all forms of transportation, everything that has to do with sustainability. I'm sorry, did everybody go? Is there anybody else who should be called?
It looks like Michael might have come off mute now. Michael, would you like to go?
Yes. Hi, this is Michael Kadransky. I'm an advocate for multimodal low-carbon transport with Ruta as well, based in Kingston, and I am a UCAT rider. I don't have a car, and I was just looking at whether the county has a complete streets policy and found that there was one in 2009, and it doesn't look like it mentions transit at all. It's all about biking and walking. And I'm wondering if that is something that's worth revisiting and updating and even including safety, as it's in there, but it's not a primary reason for the complete streets policy from 2009. So I'm interested in complete streets as they relate to multimodality and low carbon transport.
Well, thank you all so much for the introductions. I think Legislator Nolan might have had to jump, but I just, since Z mentioned it, you can see here on the agenda a review. This basically summarizes what Legislator Nolan had discussed last time, and so I would submit that to the committee as information at this point, that, and we can move on to jump back up just existing policies. So on this agenda, some of this is a summary of what was discussed last time, but most of it is new, and the existing policies had come up as a
recommendation that we look at what are our current transportation policies in a comprehensive way. So we haven't exactly done that. So I guess I put it to the group here. What maybe we let's spend a couple minutes. Is that how would we like to go about that? And or is that not something that, you know, is going to, I'll put that out like that. Is that, how do we address, how do we look through the existing policy? Who would do that is, and how? Anyone jump in if you have a thought.
I just pulled in, and thank you, Michael, for finding that. I pulled that resolution, which was, anyway, the complete streets, which was passed in 2009. So that is resolution number 229, July 8th of 2009. And it does kick a lot of this, the task to Ulster County Trail Advisory. So, yeah, I do think that would be interesting to see what we already have as policies. So we're not recreating a policy if it's already been voted on, and then perhaps see what we can't do to implement it now. Phil, you and I also discussed policies to provide bus shelters that have uniform signage on it, and specifically the signage would be the routes. It would be contact information if any questions come up, and then also I think we should put in additional information. I know the county doesn't typically support endorsement of private entities, but if for some reason the bus isn't running, if we had information up for trailways or taxi services or whatever. But, you know, I think that would be critical because the bus shelters, at least the two we have in Esopus, don't have any information at all. There's no routes, there's no contact information, there's no QR code to scan to bring you to an app. So yeah, definitely infrastructure. I think one of the other policies we were discussing too would be training in our workforce. I've gotten quite a few calls the last week and a half, specifically from and about the workforce, which is a little concerning. We're losing drivers. We have dispatchers that are being put out to drive. We have an administrative person that's doing the dispatching. People have been kind of stranded, because the buses have been canceled. So, I think that's critical more than ever, especially in a county this rural. You don't want to strand them, without having alternatives to get them to where they have to go.
Yeah. Thank you, Laura. And Eric, thank you for always reminding us about our responsibility to build bus shelters. but this, so this resolution that you have proposed, Laura, around the shelters, I think we could circulate that for consideration probably by your committee for next month at this point. And of course, we would want we would want UCAT as a department to weigh in on it. And this also looks like it would require collaboration with municipalities, which is another topic we have here. Did anybody else have a general comment about policy? We do have specific policy topics that also appear farther down the agenda.
Legislator Erner, Director Johnson has his hand up.
Please, Director Johnson.
Hi. I just want to make a broad but general but very definitive statement when it comes to the workforce. UCAT personnel is probably some of the lowest paid transportation personnel in the region. And you can't expect us to maintain a workforce where they could go off to down the street and get a $5,000 sign bonus and work for Trailways and make, you know, $5, $10 more an hour. You know, we can't compete with that. And so we are at a disadvantage. Not saying that money solves and salary solves all the woes, but that is at a core of challenges that we are facing. And when we talk about, you know, policies being in effect, a policy to make sure that the drivers are, and just the workforce in general, is getting a livable, comparable wage within that industry. And we're just not doing that. And that's very hard for us to compete with that. As far as the particulars, and I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole, but people, our workforce within UCAT has a mixture of duties. And so dispatchers are actually bus driver / dispatchers. They are our next level of backup sub drivers when people do call off and everything. And so that's the notion of a part of their job, and they're very well aware of that. Just when we don't have folks, people step up into those roles and do those duties to make sure the operation stays afloat. So I'll just leave it be at that point. But if we want to advocate, and if I could advocate for anything, is to make sure that we're looking for livable, viable wages for the workforce within UCAT, so we can retain our personnel. But also part of retention is training our personnel on key things that we need to address to create a better experience for the public as a whole.
Thank you. As a legislator, I would look forward to seeing UCAT's budget proposals coming up around all of that. And next I see Cheryl Schneider's hand.
Hi, everybody. As a citizen, as an activist, as a member of RUDA, as somebody who asks, has lots of questions. I just want to speak to, in general, a lack of transparency from the county executive, from the public transit system, from the Ulster County Transit Council, a lot, and from some of the elected Ulster County legislators, none of them here, but it's quite disappointing, and it almost verges on them actually not doing their jobs, and the FOILs are not getting answered. And when we have to FOIL for every single piece of information that should be public all the time, it starts getting into an area where people want to agitate and escalate, because we have a right to this information, and we're going to have a right to organize and go to state and federal nonprofits that actually specialize in this, looking into this stuff. And we shouldn't really have to go there, because it's confrontational, and these are incredibly basic questions we've been asking. So it's wonderful to hear people take credit for things we've been advocating for months and months, if not years. Yes, a living wage for all of our employees and everyone who contracts with the county. And yes, we have to be competitive. And yes, why is it, and I wish Mr. Hamm was still here, why is it that I understand that the union, the shop steward for CSEA, is no longer with the county, and there is no replacement. And we've got people calling out, and we've got very dissatisfied workforce. And there, from what I understand anecdotally, there's a whole lot of stuff going on the inside. And I don't think this should be happening without there being a shop steward, period. And your people are just not, they're afraid to speak up. They're afraid, and it goes on deaf ears, just like the public is trying to make ask for communications, formal emails, CCing electeds, and no response, and or saying things like, sorry, I'm too busy in my life to respond to my constituents. So I just wanted to speak to that in general, because in order for us to be productive in any of the work in this county, we're going to have to, and there's so much federal and state funds you've required, county is required to inform us and let us have provide feedback. We don't want to provide stupid sounding, unintelligent, uninformed feedback because we have incredibly experienced people in our county from all over the county thinking about this and trying to work on this. And the ethics of it all, it just makes it impossible to move forward. Stop doing this. It's required that we have provide feedback. We want to provide intelligent feedback, and this should all be out there. If there's a Green New Deal, we got more than just one page website. I am done. Thank you.
Thank you, and for sharing your thoughts there, Cheryl. And I want to also encourage us to consider again what policies we can institute here in the legislature to address any and all of what you just said.
Let's start with electeds in the Ulster County Legislature must read and respond to their county emails, period, end of story. And we should have clerks oversee it and make sure they're doing it. And if not, it should be a report monthly. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. I believe I saw Chair Petit next.
Thank you. Just to follow up with what Director Johnson had said, since it is budget time, and we want to retain drivers, and we need to keep enough staff on so, you know, that they have a regular schedule. I mean, some of these folks, because of their income, you know, are working second jobs, and they have daycare, and they need to know if they're going to be a standard Monday through Friday or Tuesday through Saturday. Or so we should probably consider, this is just a comment, I want to make sure that it's in the transcript, consider bumping them up from a grade 8 to a 10 and keep it a little bit more competitive. But that's legislative and budgetary. Thank you.
Welcome. Okay, Legislator Stewart, please.
Thank you, Legislator Erner. Kind of along those same lines, I was wondering how UCAT salaries for drivers compare to salaries for the folks who drive school buses, you know, for those independent, for those private companies. And I was also wondering if, you know, there's been any outreach to those private companies who provide school bus drivers to see, you know, if some of those folks, you know, might be induced to, you know, work for UCAT as well, or in, you know, or instead work for UCAT. Also, one other question was, I understand how, you know, childcare is often a huge problem for women who, you know, are working. And I was wondering if the county provides childcare for UCAT workers.
I could respond to those things real quick if you guys would like me to.
Yes, please.
So to my knowledge, county does not provide childcare support to the workforce. I can actually say that within UCAT, we have a more experienced workforce. So people who have either retired, this is the second career for them, or they're just later on in the years of driving, which speaks to what we need to do as far as recruiting and getting, you know, new workforce, younger folks into the industry and understand that this is a viable career for them to have. Legislator Eric, I think I forgot your first initial question was.
Oh, I was just wondering if there had been any communications with like the private companies who, you know, have school bus drivers, and if that might be a source of potential employees or.
You know. Right. So FTA regulations have hours of service. And so hours of service negates how many hours a day a driver could safely operate a vehicle, and that's capped out 10 hours a day. So if a person is working full-time as a school bus driver, 8 hours or 6 hours, then they're limited to only being able to work for us for 4 hours or so, all right? Then you also have the cap for the week, which is typically 60 or 70 hours, depending on the nature of the work that they're doing and how much time do they have in between their driving shifts. So it's very hard to co-mingle with right. another entity with that and still be within the realm of hours of service and being compliant.
And how does UCAT's salary compare to those private school bus companies? Do you know?
Typically, you're looking at a range between $5 to $10 higher than what we're offering. Plus, when you look at the sign-on bonuses that drivers are lured away with, you put that into the fact, you know, if someone throws $5,000 out there, you know, people are like, oh, I'll jump ship because I can always come back after I collect my $5,000, right? So it's a challenge nonetheless, but that's something that, you know, not to get into full talks with the union, so to say, in this medium, but this is something that both parties are very well aware of, and we are definitely working together to find a creative solution to address that one particular issue with our workforce.
Great. Thank you for that explanation. Yeah.
Okay. Cheryl's hand is up again. Go ahead.
I want to respond to Director Johnson about the FTA regulations and how that could happen. We have to raise the salary and compensation levels, but we overlap. So you have a school driver, bus driver doing a morning pickup for the schools, and then they work the rest of their FTA allotted hours driving public transit. And then you have people who come in and late and then drive other public transit and later on also somewhere in there pick up the kids and bring them home. And there was an article referenced about something that's happening in another state where they're actually using schools as transit hubs or you know, secondary satellite hubs, where the public transit hooks up with the schools at the very times that students come and go, and they make sure that there is a chain of custody, especially for the younger kids. And this is it's being documented, so go take a look at this. There are ways to do this.
Thank you. And if I might, we've covered a few topics here that I had proposed to cover on the agenda. So let me try and synthesize a little bit here. We talked about the bus shelters and stops and a resolution, some policy around that, which would require collaborating with municipalities. So I'd like to put out to the group to think about anybody from a particular municipality who's willing to begin a conversation with your municipality about what they currently do, for example, in terms of bus shelters and stops. And then we would need to coordinate that on the county level if we were to enact a policy around the county providing some of those features. In terms of the school districts, I spoke with some folks from Tompkins County, New York, actually, about how they have a proposal over there in the Finger Lakes with school bus stops at the central schools connecting with their municipal county bus system. We've heard mention about the Ulster County Transportation Council, and they certainly are bringing in funds and they have their whole own governance and policy. Some members of the council are otherwise connected with county government, so there's a natural way that we ought to be able to connect there, and then we would just need to see what policy power we have here in the legislature versus what powers that council might have an authority by law. And we also had heard last time from the presentation by Post Carbon Logistics, Andrew Wilner, around the Metropolitan Planning Organization, and they have certain authority, for example, over maritime transport, if we're talking about any sorts of sailing vessels on our river, for example, we might need to go through them. As a reminder, free buses begin October 1st. Director Johnson, we've had reports that some buses have the announcement posted there. What else do you plan to do and when to get the word out to the public about that change?
So the no cost to you service is beginning to start on October 1st. I did have some informational signage be installed in all of our vehicles. So that is in all of our vehicles right now. That just gives folks a heads up that, hey, it is going to start on October 1st. It is sponsored by, you know, the county, because again, just because the fare is free, someone is paying for that fare. And that's very important that that message is clear every time that, you know, we are discussing this initiative. As far as what do we have planned going forth, there are going to be a stream of things coming forth over the next couple of weeks here. So we will be reaching out, not to give everything away just yet because we haven't finalized everything, but we are looking at doing some direct marketing to the various towns and villages within our county to really draw that interest and draw the public out to utilize the system that's there. So typically, if I put everything in a general standpoint, it's going to be a soft rollout marketing to start. But then we have plans to rev up that marketing as months go on to keep it fresh and everything. A couple of things that we are looking at doing is partnering with some of our interdepartmental agencies to increase the awareness with that. We have done some reach outs with outside organizations that some that act as a hub for other smaller similar agencies to get the word out. We are looking at in the next 2 weeks before this goes live is actually almost doing little, you know, flip cards that we can hand out to various organizations and entities that people could just grab and get the word out that that's there. We are working on updating our current app and making sure that's ready to go to support that. I know we have a lot of concerns where people say, hey, you know, we try to call dispatcher, your website was down. But really what we want to do is use this opportunity to promote the application because the app actually has the information right there for them. And so when the website is down, the app has not been down thus far. So we want people to get used to utilizing that so they can actually see the schedules there and learn about the routes and the services that's available there. And plus that will also give the ability to see the real-time GPS of when the bus is going to be arriving, if it's running late or whatnot. So we're going to be, in short, just wrap it all up, utilizing this as an opportunity to educate and inform the public about what UCAT currently has to offer, okay? As we are in the process of procuring new software to look at the routes and revise those routes, and then we'll start engaging the public with formal public meetings to hear their concerns. As people have been reaching out to me via email or when problems do arise, I do take notes of those issues. And that way we have a running start of idea of what we need to focus on and what seems to be a reoccurring bubbling issue that always pops up and everything. So hopefully that I kind of tackled two birds with one stone with that response for you.
Yes, thank you for that. And we seem to have lost on the screen Clerk Vialba, can you put back the proposed agenda? Because for me, we've jumped into the discussion around passenger motor vehicle transit and UCAT. And
I apologize.
That's okay.
Is this
okay? Yes. Yep. So we're on the bottom section of what I see there now. Yep, that's it. Thank you.
Sorry to interrupt. I do just want to mention, I threw in the chat local law 229 of 2009 from earlier in the discussion, if anybody wants to take a look.
Thank you very much. And so now we're in the UCAT discussion. I hope Director Johnson will mind if folks had questions or direct responses to what he had just said, but whatever folks have, go ahead, please. I believe it's Mark, Pixel 3A, XL.
With regard to what Director Johnson just said about dispatchers having...
Can't hear you so well.
Oh, hold on, stand by, I'm sorry.
Mr. Shepperton, you
can you hear me now?
Yes.
Much better. Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, thank you. With respect to what Director Johnson just said about dispatchers may have to jump in and drive a bus, how can UCAT concurrently have a policy where some stops at certain times require the rider to call the dispatch and ask to be picked up? I've had that instance twice. I'm sure people are aware of it, this past Saturday morning and last week, the Price Chopper in Saugerties, where they ask you to call in and the dispatcher was out driving a bus. So nobody was answering the phone.
That is a great point. And actually goes along with how our current schedule is set up, where it's on request as far as, like, say, for instance, the Z route has that built in there. That is very hard for a regular rider to know if that bus is coming at that time or not. My philosophy and what we'll be converting to is removing all of that upon request. When we finally review all the routes, that way you know these are the stops, this is what time we're going to be there, and not have your times fluctuate based upon, because now we have a requested stop along the route that might throw off your time by 10 to 15 minutes. Mr. Shepperton, I did take note of your request from this weekend, so I do have that down in my notes about, you know, how the bus, you know, Monday through Friday comes to your area, but then on Saturday becomes upon request. It doesn't make no sense. We're still going to the same area. Just go ahead and drive by the area. Totally agree with you. And I think there's a lot of things that we all want, right? But when I look at, you know, the requests when they come in and how concerns come in, you know, some things just make sense, and we just have not been doing them for whatever reason. I don't know. I didn't create it, but what I'm hoping is to address all these issues as many as I feasibly can when we look at doing the reroute of the actual service areas and everything.
I appreciate that. I get the same sense that you came into this position and things were done a certain way, and you kind of like try to find out, well, why are things being done this way? Well, they've always been done this way, so we don't change them. Well, maybe you could change them.
Well, they are being changed, and that's why a lot of people within the workforce may be a little antsy, because they're being required and now being held accountable for the service that we're providing to the residents and the visitors of Ulster County. We can't continue to have a service that benefited the workforce and kind of let the public down in that sense. We are a public servant. That's my viewpoint, and we're here to service the public. And that's just how I look at it. You know, it is what it is. I think Ulster County deserves a service that they can actually use and trust. And I completely understand right now why people don't trust the service. Some people don't use the service. It's hard. You know, I've said it my first day here, I was going to catch the bus to work. And I couldn't even do it because I would have had to leave the night before to get there on time, the time that I wanted to get there. So it didn't make sense. So again, you know, you guys' concerns do not fall on deaf ears. Only thing I'm going to ask is for one thing only, is just time and patience to do it right. I don't want to do a quick fix or, you know, do anything quickly. I want to make sure that we are building a new foundation that will carry us through the next, you know, several, you know, years to come.
Thank you. Tanya Garment, please.
Hi. Thank you very much for that change that we're going to be having in terms of having the buses not fluctuate. I think it's a really important point that was made a couple of times. I think it was made throughout a couple of studies that they need to be reliable. I think that might have been where the demand response initially was mentioned as a way to service areas that don't have as much demand but have some need and need to be serviced. So yeah, looking at both of those ways of using the transportation and making sure that they are reliable. I want to encourage UCAT to really have some multi levels of making up for things that are understandably going a little haywire right now with the need for more drivers and drivers leaving and there was a period of time when the website wasn't able to be kept up. One thing that I think needs to really be acknowledged is that we do need to be able to get printed schedules. The schedules are changing and they're going to be changing soon. So I understand if UCAT doesn't want to do a whole rollout, maybe that's understandable that we don't have a whole rollout of a bunch of schedules right now, but they at least need to be able to have some when people request them. And as it is now, when the website wasn't updated, you couldn't print it from the website because there were some, I mean, they were small, but there were a few differences in the app schedules and the website's schedules. It was just a matter of minutes, but you could easily miss the bus. There were instances when people were missing the bus because they were relying on the website rather than the app. And when the website went out, if there could be some policies in terms of dealing with those, and maybe there already are, but I would just like to take the opportunity to encourage policies within UCAT on how to deal with those things. We can't just rely on the app. We need to be able to at least have on the app an announcement that the website's out. There was one day when both the website was out and there wasn't coverage for the phones for picking up from dispatch. It was a Sunday, but there were three buses that run on a Sunday. There was no way to tell on the phone if that there was nobody answering the phones, and there was no announcement on the social media that the website was down. And so if there was on both of those, then people who don't have the app or have access to the app, who don't have smartphones, could at least know what was going on and figure out how to get what they needed to get. And lastly, I just want to say that we really do need a large system-wide map that's available elsewhere besides the app. It needs to be printable, and I don't know if there's a way to print from the map, but from the app, but there's no way to print out the whole system so you see the connections. So these are all policies for UCAT themselves, and I don't know how they would translate into policies from the legislature. But I do want to thank the legislature for looking at all of this and thinking about how they can support this. I know that it's a big task, and we have to take chunks at a time on it. And so thank you.
So real quick, thank you, Ms. Garvin, for providing that insight. Just to be kind of crystal clear with things, like when we talk about policy, that's high level. I think a lot of things that we're talking about in this discussion here are operational based, and those are procedural based. And so when we talk about, you know, making sure we have, you know, someone staffed here and have, you know, a procedure in place or a process in place for, you know, an event of short staff, and how do we go through that process? That's a process. That's not necessarily a policy. Policy will really be from the local level, taking what FTA requires through our rules and regulations, and then, you know, the legislation setting the tone and saying, this is how Ulster County will ensure that this rule and regulation that governs UCAT will go into place. And so we do have in our rules and regs, you know, things about printed schedules, about, you know, making sure that it's in different formats and accessibility to folks. And I think you're absolutely right, Ms. Garment, you touched on one of the most troubling things that I find here is, if I look at my app, the schedule says one thing. If I go to my dispatch office, the schedule says another thing. If I look online, the schedule says something totally, completely different. And, you know, only thing I know is true is the schedule is whatever that driver gets behind the wheel and they show up at the stop right now. And that is insane to me, but that's the reality that I'm dealing with. And that's something that, you know, we have to strategically kind of look through. And the other call out to that is, I love the notion of having a map so you can know your connections, because right now we say we connect to other buses, but we really don't connect to other buses, and not on a consistent basis either. It's really, you know, a passenger having to tell the driver, hey, I'm trying to catch, you know, this bus that goes down into Kingston from, I'm coming out from New Paltz, and I want to do a switch over with the CL route or whatever, you know, and dispatch is having to call the other bus and say, hey, you're going to have a passenger. Can you let the other bus know? That's how we're doing connections right now. Or the massive, everybody takes a lunch break at noon in the plaza and we don't run any service, right? That to me is just crazy. But those are the things that I know that are at the top priorities for me to fix right away, and everything. And so, it's not just, hey, I want people to use the app. I want the app to be the primary that people starts to use, but we will still maintain those other mediums of the schedule so people have those at their disposal and everything.
Thank you.
So we've been at it for 55 minutes and had intended to spend an hour for this discussion. I'd like to go through some of these items and just having mentioned them, and we can we can pause if folks have other things that they want to say, but and there's no need to necessarily get through this whole thing tonight either, but let's see where we get to. So, and I do appreciate Director Johnson's pointing out the difference between the high level policy and the low level operations. And one thing that just occurs to me in this discussion is that this is an area of county service, perhaps where the great majority of information could really be provided by the public who have to depend on this system in a way that might not be, that might be different from the experience of even the majority of county residents. And what do I mean by that is, like, most of the people who take the bus are poor and working class folks, and not all poor and working class folks, because some folks have cars. That might be changing with an influx of new residents to our county who come from areas where they were used to having transit and not a car. But for the most part, it's still the case. And so I think that there's a lot of information there that we as county government need to be ready to accept and be guided by the experience folks are having with, and not just with UCAT, but especially with our bus system, it seems to me. And that is, I think we're starting to have those discussions. So let's keep that up. We talked about policies ensuring minimum service level a little bit, and bus shelters, signage, mechanics. This has come up before. Director Johnson, you have noted that with electrical buses, we need to train people how to service those. So that's something that I would hope we can address for next year in the budget, if not by some other means. We talked about retention, worker retention, workplace environment a little bit. I learned recently that crossing county lines requires other counties' permission, perhaps New York State DOT. We've talked about how we need to follow also federal regulations. So it might be handy for us policymakers to have all in one place just a list of, like, what are all the regulations that we're bound by? I know that that's true for all different aspects of government, but in particular, if we're going to make a policy, we need to know, like, is this already in line or not? I'd love for anybody who has any experience with that to think about a way we might compile that information usefully for this committee. Then, I'm not sure why I put this here, collaborations with private carriers, trailways. Trailways did come up in the Ulster County Transportation Council because they get some funding from government for their operations. And we know that they have a significant presence in our county. Although most of their routes are coincide with our UCAT routes too, I will note. Kingston Plaza concerns as a bus station. Maybe we can, that seems like a topic of larger discussion perhaps, but does anybody have something to say about that? Mark, is that a new hand, Mr. Shepton, or was that from before? Otherwise, I see Tanya, Ms. Garment.
I'm sorry, that's from before. I don't know how to get rid of it.
Okay, thank you. Tanya?
Hi, I actually, Michael Kondransky doesn't have the ability to put his hand up from the, so he actually just texted me to say that he'd like to ask a question.
Oh, thank you. Okay, yes, please, Michael, Mr. Kondransky, go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Director Johnson three questions that are perhaps process related to policy. So the first is a comment. I'm a app user on UCAT exclusively and have sent emails at moments when things have not been working via the app and have never received a response. So my question is there an intention to provide responses in some timely time period as a key performance indicator? So that's one question. The second, relating to Legislator Erner's point about riders have a good amount of knowledge about the system, is whether the route review and analysis will engage any of the communities around Ulster County who may have knowledge about destinations that could be served by the routes that aren't currently served. And the third is related to key performance indicators like, you know, timeliness of responding to app users who have queries, whether there's ever been or an intention to have a state of the bus annual report. So members of the public who are interested in where the bus system is coming from and where it's going can have some sense in how that's being approached. Those are my three questions.
All right. So I'm going to start with your first one. I might have to get a reminder for the second one. So your first one was regarding the app. Full transparency. I mean, anybody that has gotten to know me now almost 6 months here knows that I'm not going to hold back. So if we're not doing something, I'm going to tell you we're not doing it. When it comes to the app, and I just had a meeting with the actual owner of the company that does our app for us, Bishop Pete, and that was 2 weeks ago. He said, Lauren, you guys are only using about 10 to 15% of the features available in that application. Full transparency. When I just had a meeting with my dispatch staff, I said, hey, you know, are you guys pulling up the web-based application and utilizing that? They said, what's that? So I have to laugh at it because it's just like, if not, I'll go kind of insane and crazy. But in short, we have some deep-rooted systemic issues regarding communication that we have to unpackage, right? So my goal with the app is over the course of the next couple of weeks, we're doing trainings for our dispatch staff so they will know how to utilize that information. And what will be unique about it is the reason why sometimes things vary with that is they're not updating that app if we switch out a bus and a different bus is then going on that route versus what originally went out there. We're not doing that real-time update as we should. Also, the app has the ability to do push notifications and give our riders alerts about change in service or any detours or anything like that that might be transpiring. So, like, I know, like, I think it was Friday or one of these days, it was pouring rain and then it flooded down there around the roundout and everything. And so people need to know, like, if we're doing a detour and everything like that. So those are some things that we are working on, and that is an easy low-hanging fruit that we could kind of address, and that will make a really good quick impact to you as a rider and others. So that's that point. So I think your specific question was, will we start responding? Yes, we will start responding. Your second question was geared towards, if you could remind me,
route optimization and whether the public or there will be any engagement about whether the destinations are the right destinations. Maybe there are some destinations that are not currently being served, but actually would get more riders that the public might know about mm-hmm. that, you know, UCAT staff are not aware of across the county.
Absolutely. And so FTA requires us to do public meetings when we're doing massive changes to routes and everything. And so there will eventually be some public meetings where, you know, we'll post it as many places that we can
because I really want that to be a really engaged process. I'm looking at doing some surveys during those meetings and really getting some real-time feedback that we could take with us. But also wanted to be able to present, you know, where we're at now, current routes, and where we're covering, so you could see where we're at. And then you guys saw us like, well, does it make sense to go to this new employer over here? Or, you know, what's the frequency level that we need to have on certain routes and everything? Because a lot of that is going to be gauged by, you know, the riders, and we want to know what you guys need. We're here to serve you guys. And so it does us no good to have a route that's going somewhere that, you know, no one rides, you know, and we have those routes. We have those routes where, you know, maybe only one person rides a week, you know, or a day. You know, that's something where Ms. Garment was pointing out that we need to look at shifting towards, you know, more of that demand responsive through microtransit to capture those. That way we could put that driver on a route and increase the frequency of something, you know, more centrally located, whether it's in a New Paltz area or in a Kingston City area, to really get a more frequent headway for the public. And so then your third one kind of circled back to some KPIs, if I remember correctly, correct?
Yep, and whether there's an intention or there ever has been an attempt to have an annual report that shows the state of the bus.
To my knowledge, there has not been any annual state of the report for the system. What I can tell you what my background experience is creating data dashboards. And I would love to be able to get to a point where we put a data dashboard that's outward facing on our website, so people will see how many trips we're doing a day, how many routes are running on time. That way the public knows this is what we're providing, you know. And so that's one way that I've done it in a more creative way to make sure everybody has access to the data and the information. I think the numbers will speak for itself. I'm a firm believer in letting your work speak for yourself. I don't like to get on a soapbox and have this grandstand and saying, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. I want the data to show you where we're at. And by the initiatives that I'm going to put in place, you're going to see us grow in a positive direction going forth.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. So we're just past an hour here. I'd like to focus on wrapping this up. Chair Petit, what do you think we ought to do at this point with the what had been the proposed agenda items?
I mean, we can carry them over to next month. You and I can work separately on some more policies so we can discuss that. You know, certainly it's budget season, so I would really like to focus on what it'll take to bring in more drivers and bring them up to a rate where they're, you know, they'll be staying on. And Legislator Nolan said that she would have her portion done. So perhaps if it could... It's getting longer. Is that what you're saying? The agenda is getting longer instead of shorter?
No, well, we just didn't quite touch on all of these topics, although yeah. Some of them we had are left over for even from last time. And just as a reminder here, so I guess.
Which is fine. I mean, you know, I think it was great discussion. You know, you don't have to complete the agenda. This is more of a working group, so we get to where we get. Yeah.
Okay. Well, does anyone have any final thoughts? Otherwise, I'm happy to turn it back to the chair to finish up. Ms. Garment.
Connie,
Thanks. There was something about Kingston Plaza. It's the hub. I just wanted to quickly thank Director Johnson for acknowledging that we don't have a lot of connections. And there are many ways that we can start making connections with timing, but also for adding extra hubs. And then I wanted to bring up the topic of this group. The work group is really, really glad to have it. It's really good in it. And there's legislators who are here because they were here right before at the meeting, and they're here continuing on and spending all this extra time. And it's already in the schedule is a benefit of having it afterwards. But during busy times, do you think that the work group would consider having it, you know, having like an extra one mid-month or something at a different time that other people might be able to join in that wouldn't be able to make it, like in the evening, for instance, people who want to take the bus, or I guess we're doing it remotely, but or people who might need to use the library to join or in or something like that. Actually, I guess we have the call-in option. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that topic up because it kind of goes with the running out of time theme question.
And just to clarify, this is actually, I think, the last county meeting that's going to be remote. The governor came out with her executive decision that we should be going back to in-person meetings.
And Chair Petit, do you know whether there will continue to be a call-in option for the public or any hybrid?
I mean, I'm certainly in favor of it. I can take another look because from the portion that I read of the executive's decision, or the governor's, I'm sorry, it appeared to be more lawmakers. I mean, this is a committee. We make recommendations, we pass through resolutions, but ultimately it's a legislative body. So I think we should talk to legal counsel and see if we could consider a hybrid. Absolutely. And Mark has his hand up.
I just have a quick question directed to the Director Johnson. When could I expect the changes in the routes and schedules to begin?
So right now we're in the process of procuring the needed software to do this work. Otherwise, I don't have the manpower or even the staff with the experience to do the work that is needed to give Ulster County the routing system and schematic that it deserves and been asking for years. So I'm hoping to have that procured within the next, hopefully by mid-October, end of October. And then it will take about a month and a half to get a working plan together. And then we'll start looking at doing public meetings along the way. And those will be community-based. So, you know, like we'll take Kingston area, and we'll show the routes that interconnect in Kingston, which will be all of them, right? But then I also want to be able to go out to, you know, like New Paltz here or out in Ellenville to hold some meetings there to get the impact of what it is that they need out of a transit system and everything. So to answer your specific question, I would say about 4 to 6 months.
Thank you.
Well, thanks all for the discussion. Back to you, Chair Petit.
Okay. Well, I don't think we have anybody here except perhaps Legislator Stewart. So I'm not quite sure how we make a motion to close the meeting. So I guess that's it. I'll have to ask Chelsea. So do we have to stay until next month?
Do you believe that you don't need a quorum to adjourn?
We don't. Okay. So Legislator Stewart, are you still on?
I still am here, yes.
Yes. Would you like to make a motion to adjourn our wonderful meeting?
I move that we adjourn and thank everyone for attending.
I second that motion. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Good night, folks. Thank you all.